Time to talk greener living, and we're just a fortnight or so away from World Pangolin Day, a day that is used to raise awareness around pangolin trafficking. Sadly, though, it just felt like this conversation couldn't wait until then, because in the last couple of weeks and months, we've heard that another three species of this already critically endangered animal have been added to the red list, as it's called, that list of creatures dangerously close to extinction. A recent study which looked at pangolin numbers and movement from the year 2000 to 2019 estimates that more than 850,000 pangolins have been illegally traded, and that makes them the most trafficked mammal on the planet. So perhaps that red list addition is no surprise at all. Even though countries have voted to ban the international trade in all species of pangolins, that happened in 2016 already at a CITES meeting. Unfortunately, they are still being targeted for their meat by the wildlife trade and for other reasons which my guests will explain to us. I say guests plural because with me in studio is Audrey Delsink, who's the Humane Society International Africa Wildlife Director. And then joining us on the phone is Nikki Wright, who is a wildlife campaign consultant who works at the Joburg Wildlife Veterinary Hospital, where they treat and release pangolins who've been rescued from this kind of predicament or from injury with a view to getting them back into the wild. Let me start with you, Audrey. Welcome to Cape Talk. Lovely to have you in studio with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us to talk about this important issue.
I think just a bit of context, won't you just briefly tell our listeners who and what Humane Society International is all about?
So Humane Society International is a animal welfare organization. We are focused globally, and we handle all types of animals. So your wildlife, your laboratory, farm animals and companion or domestic animals. Mm-hmm. And we fight the fight on all fronts, so from judiciary, legislation, cruelty cases, on whatever front we can. And so we work with partners on the ground, in this case Johannesburg Wildlife Veterinary Hospital. Nikki is one of our, is actually our wildlife campaign manager as part mm-hmm. of the HSI Africa team. And so we empower such organizations to do the hands-on work in the field and on the ground.
Okay, thanks for that introduction. Let me bring Nikki in at this point, a wildlife rehabilitation specialist, as Aubrey's just said. Nikki Wright on the line to us from Gauteng. Nikki, thanks so much for being available to join the conversation today. Welcome.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
You are the veterinary expert in the room. Won't you just tell us a little bit about pangolins, just to give our audience a sense of what is special about these creatures? For those who have heard the name but are struggling to picture it, don't really know much about them, can you give us a bit of a broad picture?
Sure, I will. But just to say that I'm not a vet, I'm a wildlife specialist.
Wildlife specialist. Okay, apologies for that. Okay.
That's okay. Yeah, pangolins are intriguing animals. They've been on the planet for 84 million years. They haven't had to change their evolution much because they're perfectly formed for what they do. And what they do is eat ants. And that's all they do. It's called myrmecophagous, which is a fantastic word to describe just that specialist feeding on ants. They're the only scaled mammal on the planet. So they're heavily armored with these keratinous scales. They have no teeth, but they have a very long tongue, and very, very sticky. So they can put that tongue into the ground, and it sticks all the ants to it, mm-hmm. and they pull the tongue back in, and then they've got a mouthful of ants.
So it's like a natural piece of fly paper, in effect.
It's incredible. And they're nocturnal, mostly, and there are four species in Africa and four species in Asia.
Four species in Africa and four in Asia. Now, I mentioned that three additional species have been added to the red list. How many were already on the list before that, Nikki?
Aud, you'll have to help me. You've done the CITES work.
Audrey, sorry, can you...
Yeah, so they were listed, but at a lower category. So now they've actually just increased the level of protection. So they were up to now critically endangered. They've just been listed as critically endangered. So, again, just highlighting the plight of these creatures, predominantly started with the Asian species, but now, of course, heading over to the African species as the Asian species are just diminishing.
Gosh. I'm sure listeners are listening to this going, well, what's the appeal? Why does somebody want a creature that's built to digest ants and has a long tongue like a piece of sticky fly paper? Audrey, where is the trafficking demand coming from? Why are these creatures so highly prized by traffickers?
So essentially the main demand is coming from Asia, specifically China and Vietnam. This creature has certainly got a mythical tendency to it. It's used in a number of for a number of reasons, certainly for traditional medicine use. You know, they believe that in eating the pangolin fetuses, it can increase their virility. Sure. Blood can cure cancer. The scales also have certain qualities. Certainly in West Africa, it's used as a form of bush meat. So actually not really for the scale use.
Yeah.
But we're seeing that predominantly this trade is increasing and moving to these African species for generally for the scales.
Okay, so that was going to be one of my questions. Is the poaching of the African species in particular coming from within Africa from demand for bushmeat, or is it coming from poachers coming here from Asia looking to take the scales and back, etc., for all those medicinal reasons you've just listed?
I'd say the latter is the is the main reason. You know, the bushmeat scale is there, but it's certainly not the primary driver.
Okay.
The primary driver is absolutely the use of scales for traditional use. It's also regarded as a status symbol, you know, to have a product of this kind. So that's the source.
Now, Nikki, I said in the introduction that through your work at Joburg Wildlife Veterinary Hospital, you're involved in treating pangolins who've come to your facility and then releasing them back into the wild. What brings them to you? Are they animals that have been rescued from trafficking? Are they animals who've been injured in some other way? Typically, how does a pangolin arrive on your doorstep?
Yes, so they're all animals that have been in the illegal trade. They've all been poached out of their natural habitat and subjected to quite horrific abuse and you know, bad handling, no water, no food, often tied up in a sack for days. It could be up to 2 weeks. And then they are confiscated on sting operations, which, you know, are conducted by the law enforcement officials, and then come through to our hospital where, you know, I have the rehabilitation expertise to do with pangolins, and our veterinarian, Dr. Corinne Lawrence, has the veterinary expertise to treat pangolin. And then from there, we, the African Pangolin Working Group, make sure that they are released in suitable reserves with a lot of post-release monitoring.
Okay, how did you, as a matter of interest, Nikki, how did you become a pangolin specialist? Was it something you intentionally set out to do because you cared about this particular species, or did it just happen along the way?
It happened along the way. And literally, I think in 2007, a pangolin was put into my arms. That was the first pangolin I'd ever dealt with, and it was brought in off the trade. And from there, it's been a very steep learning curve. Because nobody knew much about them. You know, you couldn't open a book and find out what medicine to give them or anything about their biology. And that we've learned, you know, because we've been forced to learn as much as we possibly can in an attempt to actually save the order.
How robust are they? I mean, is treating them, you've described appalling conditions there that would challenge any animal, terrible dehydration, the bad handling, etc. Are they, if you do manage to intervene and rescue them from the traffickers, how successful are your efforts typically to be able to rehabilitate them?
Well, there are losses, which hit us very badly, of course, because sometimes the pangolins are just too far gone. So they've already started going into organ failure. And once that happens, the chances of full recovery are very, very slim. But we try with every single animal. Our success rate treating them has increased, you know, over the last 2 years exponentially because we've learned so much about them and have done procedures that help us to save them. So, yeah, I'm happy to say that the ones that are sort of positive stand a very good chance of succeeding in the wild. But the release process is also very difficult. Don't forget, they're not only physically compromised when they're coming off the trade, but they're psychologically compromised. So they suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome, much like baby rhinos have done, you know, after they've been through their mum being shot. And these animals have to get through that as well as through all their physical hurdles in order to have a chance at being a healthy wild pangolin again.
I would imagine, I'm glad you went there in terms of the psychological impact. I would imagine they must be conditioned to be terrified of humans, which I suppose in a horrible way is a good thing, Nikki. Does that help protect them from falling victim to trafficking again, or are they particularly vulnerable for any reason that we need to alert our listeners to?
You know that pangolins, when they roll into a ball, they're virtually impenetrable. So you see pictures of adult lions playing with them and investigating them, unable to open them up. So they're incredibly strong animals. They have this amazing natural armor to protect themselves with. Mm. The only predator that they have is us, the two-legged one. So they roll into a ball to protect themselves, and the poachers just pick them up and put them into a sack. Mm. So, yeah, when they come in off the trade, they are exceedingly stressed. And that is one of the first things that we start addressing. But they do, with gentle handling and calm, peaceful voices and just putting them in a safe environment and giving them what they need, as well as the treatment, they do start to almost trust a particular handler or the other, mm-hmm. which is quite interesting. Some have a preference for women, others have a preference for mm-hmm. for a male handler, but they always have preferences for very gentle, calm people, and that helps us to get them better.
Just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, we're talking about an ongoing concern in terms of international wildlife trafficking, the pangolin, the most trafficked mammal on the planet. We learned late last year that their conservation status had been escalated in terms of how severely endangered they are. And with me in studio is Audrey Delsink, who is the Humane Society International's Africa Wildlife Director. Talking to us on the phone from Gauteng is Nikki Wright, who is a wildlife campaign consultant associated with Joburg Wildlife Veterinary Hospital, involved in treatment and release of pangolins who've been rescued from the trade. I mean, it's a depressing story, Audrey, to listen to. It's horrible to picture, because I think for the person asking, is this the same thing as a scaly anteater? The answer is yes, that's the old term for it. Correct, Audrey?
Correct. It's very similar. Okay. But I mean, it's a uniquely African animal in that sense. I think what, you know, Nikki related to earlier about the fact that they roll up is just what makes this story so desperately sad, because unlike the Asian species, those are largely tree dwelling. Our species here in South Africa is ground dwelling, and they do den and burrow. And so If you think that last year 68 tons of pangolin scales were confiscated, and these are largely animals that live underground, how on earth do they find these things? So, it's devastating to know that such a vulnerable, shy, elusive creature is being poached out to such an extent. I mean, those were 68 tons that left Africa alone.
I was going to ask, from Africa alone.
So it's devastating. And, you know, also the seizure data only reveals the amount of wildlife product that is obviously recovered, and it's not an indication of how much has actually been taken. Mm. And so we're just touching the surface here of what's actually going on. So it's mind-boggling.
If we found 68 tons, how much was not found? Where are they being found? Where are the points at which these interventions are working and catching poachers? Are they trying to leave by ship, by plane? Can you talk to us about how they're taken from the country?
Well, I think South Africa is tending to be sort of a conduit. I think a lot of, and Nikki certainly can speak to this through experience of where these confiscations have gone to court, and, you know, who these suspects are that are being charged. A lot of them are coming from other African countries into South Africa and leaving, and then the product leaves South Africa. So yes, definitely South Africa is a boiling point, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But it's across the scale, and of course, it all culminates in Asia, which is the main surface. I must add, though, that in the USA, what happened was that there was a period of about 10 years where 26,000 imports of pangolin products were actually recovered, and that's the USA. So you wouldn't imagine that there would be a market in the USA. But clearly there is, and this is also through traditional medicine use. So we've got to tackle these things on multiple facets and multiple grounds.
I know when we talk about the rhinos, one of the strategies that's being employed in the Far East is to try and change that status symbol that you spoke about, to try and make it uncool to own rhino horn products. And they've enlisted celebrities to try and speak out about it and say, I don't want it in my home. It's not cool. We need to change the perspective on this. Is anyone doing something similar for the pangolin?
I think a lot more wildlife conservation organizations are doing that. Humane Society has certainly undertaken a demand reduction campaign, specifically in China and Vietnam. In China, we've reached more than 8 million residents, and particularly focusing on school children. Okay. And the public, and that means to do exactly that, to say this is a vulnerable, shy, elusive creature. It's cruel, it's not kind, and you're not cool to have them.
Nikki, Audrey's mentioned court action, which tells me that at least some traffickers are being brought to court. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you've witnessed or heard professionally about the success rate of prosecutions when that happens?
Yes. So myself and Prof Ray Jansen and a couple of our other members of the African Pangolin Working Group are often subpoenaed to court to give testimony in aggravation of sentencing in pangolin cases. And to date, our most successful or our highest sentencing has been 8 years. So that is pretty satisfying. And okay. every single poacher that gets arrested goes to court. Some get, as I say, a sentence of that's as good as 8 years. Others in some courts are still sort of getting a fine or a suspended sentence. So there's always room for improvement. But I mean, literally, it's been in the last couple of years that we've been really pushing and assisting the courts and training prosecutors and just being very present at every single court case. And it seems to be paying off.
Well, congratulations to you and thank you to you, because I know it's a huge burden for professionals to be away from their day jobs to sit in court and be part of cases like this. But clearly, if it is making an impact, it must be feel very validating for you. And Nikki, just in closing, somebody's asking whether you have any capacity to track the pangolins who have been rehabilitated and released into the wild. Are they fitted with any kind of tags that allow you to know where they go and what becomes of them?
Yes, indeed, they are. It's a critical part of the entire release process, is knowing what happens to those pangolins once they've been released, given what they've been through, on a physical and a mental and psychological level. So every pangolin is fitted with two types of telemetry. One is a satellite tag, and the other one is a VHF tag. So they each have two different functions, which allows us to find these animals and monitor their movements, monitor their condition, and keep a very close eye on them.
Nikki Wright, thank you so much for joining the conversation today. Wildlife rehabilitation specialist chatting to us there from Gauteng. Audrey, one very quick final question for you is the one I want to leave our audience with. What can we do other than go, it's terrible, I'm horrified by what we hear? Is there anything that the ordinary man on the street can do to be part of a solution here?
I think the main thing is to generate awareness. A lot of people don't even know what a pangolin is, let alone what its plight is. So that is key. Generate awareness in your communities, in your schools, within government, call for specific measures to focus exclusively on pangolin, because often the pangolin is superseded by, for example, elephant or rhino, which equally face devastating challenges. But we shouldn't lose sight of those particular species. And, just don't buy wild. Don't participate in any, industries or activities that promote the use of wild animals as products or entertainment.
That's from the Humane Society International, Africa's, their Africa Wildlife Director, Audrey Delsing. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Papa.